questions on this?
Thank you. I think it's just the right sequence here of papers. We just heard a paper where 300, 400, 500 millimeters of water were added on sandy soils. What we're addressing here is a revision of something we started at Michigan State University 42 years ago. And in those days, we called it asphalt moisture barriers. And we'll talk about that and a little of that history. And then we'll talk about some of the new approaches we're taking that are giving phenomenal results with regard to water use efficiency, fertilizer, nitrogen use efficiency, and how we can apply some of this to not only sandy soils, but other soils around the world that have high infiltration rates and low water retention rates. Kurt Thelen, an agronomist, is a co-author here. Gerhard Scholtink is the person who works with land use planning. One of the most pressing challenges we see about all of this time of the year and this age we're in is there is a looming global water crisis. And that's very important, not only in this country as we try to address the questions of food versus fiber and how many marginal soils we need to move into and how many sandy soils or coarse textured soils we're going to need to move some of the cellulosic biomass production into, and with something that is a little more sustainable than we've had in the past. Certainly the deserts are growing, whether it's in China or whether it's in northern Africa, and we see with growing populations, of course, a greater need for food production. Soils, of course, as we've just seen in the last paper, sandy soils can be very productive, but they're very high primary inputs. And although the supplemental irrigation and application rates and manure additions and so forth are very productive in a sustainable fashion, whether it's the cost of energy that goes into it or the losses of leaching products down through sands are quite high. So what we felt was important is to begin to move in a direction of this concept now that we call water holding capacity of soils improvements. And we've got several names here. We started out with SWART, that's the subsurface water retention technology. And what we're using are now, instead of asphalt moisture barriers, we're using these contoured, engineered polyethylene membranes. We'll refer to these as SEPM. What this does essentially is transforms the water holding capacity of sands in the root zone, the vadose zone, if you wish, and it will apply both water retention as well as some aeration differences. Here's the old system we used. We needed hot asphalt. We needed some systems that were quite powerful to move them. These are the kind of barriers we had across the landscape. These were laid on top of each other. You could peel them back from the soil surface. This was something that was shown to the soil scientists in 1968 in Adelaide. You can see a bus full of them there. Some of you might recognize some of the individuals. And what happened here was this asphalt barrier was applied perpendicular, if you wish, to the rows of these kiwi fruits. The first planting is 6 years old, the second planting is 2 years old. You can see the different treatments of dry surface, no barrier. Here's irrigation with a barrier. Here's no irrigation at all with a barrier. And you can see there's very minimum water stress here compared to these regions without the barrier. And of course, they saw roughly a 55% increase or 155%. In Taiwan, we did similar sorts of things. We could move up to 3 harvests per year. So we had a net increase of 400% increase in grain rates of rice with 80% less water. You can see the difference. Same sort of differences were with the asphalt water barriers for sugarcane. On a 75-centimeter depth barrier, we saw quite a few increases in yield. In fact, it was somewhere in the neighborhood of about 200%, 2 to 300% increases of sugarcane over these areas that did not have barriers. We can go very quickly of what we saw in the past, and I might add, I'm just giving you a review of what we've done in 5 states and 5 continents. Since the middle 60s, there have been 37 publications, at least that we can locate, of other individuals who've tried this. And always it's turned out to be a very positive response in many areas, but the dilemma is occasionally there's this excessive rainfall that causes flooding. We'll talk a little more about this. In vegetable stands, we saw 146 increases. We saw 142%, 175%. This biomass increase usually paid back in the 60s of a $560 application fee for the barrier. It would be paid for by the increases in yield after 1 or 2 years. Again, summarizing, the kiwi in Australia, 155 in Taiwan. The rice paddies of 400, the sugar cane up to 300. So if we look at the range here of potatoes in Michigan, which is, of course, a humid temperate versus a rice in a subtropical humid region, we can see huge increases in percentages of yields between 33 or 133% in 2000. Now, what I'm doing here is summarizing an engineer's plot of 14 different crops growing on these five different states, and he simply ranked these based on their increases in yield. But what I've tried to show you here is the blue is the irrigated barrier. In other words, that was the asphalt barrier with irrigation, and the red is this barrier that had no irrigation on whatsoever, okay? So what we saw with the increases of the barrier was roughly a 20% increase in yield of these different crops. What I've shown you here, and it's a little small for those of you in the back, but these are now 10 crops summarized in 100 weights per acre. You can tell that's a pretty old way of reviewing yields. But if you look at the control, that's the first bar on each one of these crops. That's the control without the barrier. If we added the barrier, that's the gray area. You don't see the gray area superseding up until we get into these higher producing vegetable crops, and then these gray areas with just barriers alone not only saved 80% of the water, but outproduced everything else that was applied. So what we have here, the subsurface water retention technology, certainly a revolutionary new approach for expanding food and biomass production. We can do this on sandy soils, we can do it alpha soils, we can do it on oxosolic soils that have these very high infiltration rates. And there are roughly 20 billion acres of these sandy soils alone on the face of the earth that can be applied. There are somewhere in the neighborhood of about 37 billion acres of sand, but just 20 acres of those. Just by way of theory, and this is W.H. Gardner's work of many years ago, if you look at the water infiltration rate versus time, and you follow that wetting front down through a clay, you see when that wetting front meets the clay, it drops precipitously, two or three orders of magnitude of infiltration. On a sandy soil, that's not the case. Here we had an air bubble, it filled up, and it dropped off. So what we're doing essentially with the sepum barriers is we're dropping from the infiltration rate of sandy soils from 966 to the 10 to the 6 to roughly 40-fold less, okay? So that's how we can save that soil, so save that water in the soil and the nutrients. If you look at the water retention barrier, and we put a barrier 50 centimeters deep, we can hold water in sandy soils at roughly 33% in contrast to what normally drains at about half that. And if we look at some data we collected now, this is what, almost 42 years ago, on the barrier we could keep 46%, off the barrier it was 25%. The dilemma is with the old system, we had a sealed system all the way across the field. So what happened was when we had these excessive rainfall or perhaps an extra amount of irrigation before heavy rain, we would begin to get yields less than the controls using these barriers. So the new sepum now, as we call it, this subsurface system, is now going to be installed in very small regions of 12 to 14 inches, 30 centimeters across, at depths based upon the soil texture, of course, 60 to 70 centimeters deep. And these would be filled with water, and this is the demonstration of the capillary rise now of this water that's being held at least at field capacity. And these will drain now as the hydrostatic pressure begins to build up so that we'll not have anaerobic conditions. So the A regions here are a very high quantity of water that only a loam soil or perhaps a clay loam soil would hold, but we can now do this with the barriers in sand soils. Below these, of course, it's going to be the normally drained regions. Then in between, we're going to have some dripping off and running off the edges, of course, and this is where we lose roughly about 10%. But most of the time, if we don't over-irrigate and we don't have excessive rainfall, we will keep 99 to 100% of the water in the root zone. These are some treatments. We're working with these perforated polyethylene containers. And if we notice the coarse soil that's 40 to 60 centimeters above that barrier, it drains out pretty quickly. If we have a medium textured soil, that drains out very quickly. This is 7 days from the time we flooded the soil. In a coarse the fine textured soil, we can see that that fine textured soil will still keep that that soil water content just a few percentage points below that flooded level, which means we have a very nicely aerated soil. So in summary, what we have here are opportunities, at least in the state of Michigan. I was watching during the program presentation here. If you'll notice, Michigan was always outside that range of areas that could produce quite a bit of cellulosic biomass without irrigation. Why? Because we have 4 to 6 million acres of sand. So most of our sandy soils are being irrigated, whether it's for potatoes or as we're moving now into cellulose. Currently, cellulose biomass, currently switchgrass on sandy soils is about a half to a ton per acre. Recently, we've been able to increase with some of the agronomists. Kurt Thalen now is producing quantities up to about 12 tons per acre, and this is without irrigation on loam soil. So as we can hold enough water in that sandy soil and begin to produce up to 8 tons of cellulosic biomass per entire section. Okay, so this is 640 acres. This is the outline of Michigan Lower Peninsula and Upper Peninsula. We've asked the question, where is the sandy soil? Where is the unemployment? Where is the employment potential? Where are the highways? What is the possibilities of putting specific ethanol liquid biorefineries in these locations? And these are the five regions that we potentially could move for producing up to the 30 tons of cellulose per week. Per week that's needed for each one of these. So, what we're saying here is, if we move in this direction, we can look at many national and global expansions of increasing grain yields. The FAO says we need to be at 40% increases by 2020. We heard some numbers just recently here that if we go to 2050, we need to double yields for food. We're going to need to expand our marginal soils substantially if we're moving not only for food production but for cellulosic biomass. And also, the new CEPAM approach with polyethylene barriers is at roughly $400 per acre, and that could be recovered in 1 or 2 years. This will mean some national policy changes in water long-term ownership, certainly expanded cooperatives, and perhaps even some of the new loan banking and insurance policy changes, because we're going to have much less drought to these plants as we're retaining enough of this water. This is a very quick summary of what is happening here in the short period of time that we've seen and collected data of looking at what we can do across 6 continents and how we can improve this food production somewhere between 150 and 200%. So, very quick summary. It's a revolutionary green process. We enhance food and cellulose production. It can be used to sustain farming on the sandy soils and deserts. I might add, in China, we've had a lot of discussion. They're adding 17 times the water needed to grow potatoes in the Gobi Desert, and 600 kilograms per hectare of nitrogen. We can cut that back considerably. And you see other ways of transforming life. So I'll stop there, and if there's any questions, I thank you.
Warm applause for all the speakers.